evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories we're covering today, Tuesday, October 1st, 2019. A lawmaker says an oil leak has caused serious damage in three areas of Northern Leech State.
These three areas are neighboring each other and are also close to the rivers and swamps where people fetch water. So the explosion happened there.
And a member of South Sudan's Council of State says the oil company and the government have done next to nothing to repair oil leaks or clean up contaminated water.
You can see from the photos, it's just rivers of crude oil that's running. Definitely because of the chemicals, because of the oil itself, it will affect the environment apart from the natural environment.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A lawmaker representing Northern Leech State in the transitional National Legislative Assembly says oil leaking from a broken pipeline is polluting land in eastern Rubkona, Bentiu, and Gudang. The oil leaks began over a week ago. The state's information minister says government officials expect the oil company involved to fix the problem. Viola Elias reports for VOA from Juba.
MP Gabriel Tabgajek says the oil leaks began when an oil pipeline owned by the Greater Pioneer Operating Company broke in Gudang area on September 24th. The company is owned by Chinese National Petroleum Corporation, Malaysian Petronas, Indian Ongas Vidash, and the Nile Pet of South Sudan. Speaking in Arabic, Tab says crude oil leaking from the broken pipeline is contaminating the River Nile and smaller water source affecting people in Rubkona East, Greater Rubkona, and Bentiu counties.
These three areas are neighboring each other and are also close to the rivers and swamps where people fetch water. So the explosion happened there. The water from these rivers and swamps flows to the main river in Bentiu, from which a majority of the people and animals drink. As a result, pollution and human catastrophe has occurred in the region.
Tab says this is not the first time water source of South Sudanese communities have been damaged by oil production. He says reports of disease outbreak related to environmental pollution surfaced many times in the past, and a jump in the number of stillbirth and babies born with deformities were reported after previous oil leaks, according to TAP. 5 months ago, the governors of oil-producing states have called on Petroleum Minister Ezekiel Lulgat-Koth to review all contracts of oil companies operating in South Sudan's oil fields. The governor says some of the agreements that oil companies signed with the government predate South Sudan independence from Sudan, and at that time the government was not concerned about the well-being of southern Sudanese who lived near the oil fields. Tab says the crude oil leaks are causing the deaths of numerous animals in the area. He says area communities will suffer greatly unless the oil companies take immediate steps to fix the leaking pipeline.
This issue happened 4 days ago, but the explosion of the pipe or gas leak to the forests and rivers occurred early and people did not realize what happened. Also, the company was not open about what happened. However, 4 days ago, when people went to their farms to harvest their crops, they were surprised that the farms are full of water.
Tab says many white animals have died since the pipe leak occurred because they drank from a tainted water source. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus by phone from Northern Leech, the State Information Minister David Geist says officials from Greater Petroleum Operating Company have yet to visit the affected area since the oil leaks began.
Of course, the oil has spilled over the water, as I've seen, the way I've seen, and the management committees was expected to come from Juba for final control from the oil to the oil field. The BFOC high-level delegation would have come to the field to oversee this oil exploration. This is what I know so far.
It is not clear how many oil leaks are involved. Guy Dinot says when oil executives from Greater Pioneer arrived to assess the damage in the affected area, a source within the South Sudan Petroleum Ministry, who spoke on condition of anonymity because he is not authorized to speak to media, says Mayen Wall, the undersecretary in the South Sudan Petroleum Ministry, and a delegation from the oil company traveled to the oil field yesterday. South Sudan in Focus reached out to Petroleum Ministry officials in Juba for comment. Top officials, including the minister and the undersecretary, were said to be occupied with meetings the whole day. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
A lawmaker in South Sudan's Council of States says leakages from oil pipelines in the former Unity State have threatened the livelihood of thousands of families. Mary Ayen Mijok Kir says rivers of crude oil from a broken pipeline contaminated huge areas at Ruig State's Aling County. Ayen says oil companies and the South Sudan government have done remarkably little to prevent oil from damaging the environment.
The leakage is too much, as you can see from the photos. It's just rivers of crude oil that's running. Definitely because of the chemicals, because of the oil itself, it will affect the environment. Apart from the natural environment, the plants, the trees, and all the living creatures that are depending on this area, they will be affected, and the people are seriously will be. So it's a serious concern because I understand that for sustainability of oil production, we should be concerned also about these issues of environment protection.
Talking about the damages as a result of oil leakage or oil exploration in the area, who is supposed to hold the oil companies accountable?
By law, the environment is supposed to be protected. Our constitution is saying everyone has the right to enjoy a safe and healthy environment. So it is a fundamental mandate of the government to monitor the oil companies, to set the law that the environment is considered. Coming to who is supposed to monitor them, there are the law that all of us, including us in the legislature, we are part of the oversight, the government and the implementing, the Ministry of Petroleum, the environment, and it is unfortunate that still now South Sudan doesn't have an environmental law, but yet the constitution is very clear on issues to do with the environment. Again, also we have the Commission on Petroleum and Gas, which is supposed to be a main stakeholder in any decisions that are taken by the partners and the Minister of Petroleum. And this part I'm seeing that is not in place. I've never heard about an action taken by this commission.
You were saying that this is not the first time oil spills are happening in the area. People who are familiar with how the oil industry operates, and they have been ringing alarm bells that the oil companies seem to be ignoring the laws of the country. Is that how you feel?
I think that is correct. Looking to the experiences of the other oil-producing states, such as Norway, we are seeing the state is the one has the upper hand on the partners. But in our case, I think the partners are left to do what they like. Even the majors for protecting the environment is like they will do what they like, not what the state actually wants. And we have been raising this several times. I have several documents that I raised here in the parliament that we want to see our government, we want to see ourselves as legislators, that actually we are doing the right oversight over the oil companies, whether they are the national consortium or whether they are the foreigners.
And how about the state government? I mean, the Ruang state government, what are they doing to contain this situation? It looks like the oil spill is right under their nose.
Yesterday we had a meeting with the governor, who is here in Rukem, 3 days ago from Ruang state. So I talked this morning with the Minister of Petroleum, and I think they sent some teams to the area, and they said that the situation is somehow now contained. At least the leakage is contained, but of course the damage is still in place, and to do recover and to restore the damage, obviously it will take, it's not that an easy process that will be done just in a day or a few days.
In a normal democracy, a situation like this will prompt lawmakers to ask the Minister of Oil and the chairperson of the Petroleum Commission to step down because it looks like they are, if you like, sleeping on their jobs. Why is this not happening in South Sudan?
There were several attempts from the parliament where we summon those relevant authorities. And even right now, as parliament also, there are always procedures. So I'm telling you that this event happened in 25th. We heard about it on 27, and that's why you are hearing us now. We are even here in the parliament. I raised it as information, and I'm seeking also the procedural measures for my institution. What can we do about it? So that we even in the parliament, we have procedures to follow. It's not a decision of one person that you ask somebody to resign or to do. We will call them and we will know from them what happened and what are they doing exactly.
That is Mary Ayen Mijuk Kier, a member of the Council of States at the South Sudan Legislative Assembly. She was speaking with my colleague John Tanza from Juba earlier today via WhatsApp. On this National or International Day of Older Persons, a number of older South Sudanese in Juba say they lack basic necessities like food and shelter. Many older people say they have no access to social services and they have no one to care for them. A National Ministry for Gender, Child and Social Welfare official admits that the government does not financially support older South Sudanese. Ding Magat has more for VOA from Juba.
70-year-old Joyce Yamu lives in Kogi, about 3 kilometers from Juba. Yamo says she does not like to depend on others, but she says the government should provide social services to the elderly. Speaking in Arabic, Yamo says if the government were to provide her with money for medicine and little more for startup capital, she would open a small business selling groceries.
Let them help us with medication, give us mosquito nets, give us food, or provide us with any other assistance that can improve our life as elderly people. We are ready to sell items such as charcoal or sugar. This will definitely help us depend on ourselves as elderly.
Charles Kigi Raba, a 66-year-old pastor in Kogi, says elderly people do not have the energy to continue working.
They are old, they don't have any job to help themselves. Even their children cannot help because they don't have any place of job. People are going to the mountain there and collect the stone in one place when somebody come to buy and then you can find them.
72-year-old Joseph Bingo Ibrahim says the government should intervene and help the elderly, not only in Juba but across the country.
We are real suffering because there is no possibility that we can do, and there is nothing can help us. If there should be a possibility, government will not leave such as to the organization. So government should interfere and to help the elder people.
A local NGO called Care for the Elderly is among a handful of organizations supporting senior citizens in South Sudan. The NGO's director, Justin Yangi, says when she visited her grandfather in Wau 2 years ago, she realized he needed help. That visit motivated her to launch Care for the Elderly.
He was suffering a lot, up to the extent he started hallucinating. He talks to himself, and nobody was there paying attention to him. I am his grandchild. I talk to him, but he does. Sometimes he remembers me, sometimes he doesn't. So I felt that if this is my grandpa going through this, what about other old people in other homes and in other places?
Stephen Okwenagwet, Director for Social Welfare in the National Ministry for Gender, Child and Welfare, says the government has yet to draft a blueprint to address the issues affecting South Sudanese senior citizens.
To facilitate the enjoyment of the elderly people and also to promote their health also is one of the issues which need to be addressed. Recognize to provide services which are to be given to these elderly people also.
Agwet says the government should also provide food and nutrition for elderly and make sure they have adequate shelter. He says the government does not collect statistics on the number of people over the age of 65 in the country. According to statistics, published by the UN Department of Economic and Social Affairs, or UNDESA, in 2016, older people constitute 5.1% of South Sudan's population of 12.1 million people. South Sudan's transitional constitution of 2011 states that the elderly and persons with special needs have the right to be treated with dignity, and that the elderly shall be provided with the care and medical services they need. The government is not enforcing that right. The United Nations Principles for Older Persons, adopted by the UN General Assembly in 1991, requires all governments to expand support to older persons. For VOA News, I am Ding Magot in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Egyptian doctors are treating South Sudanese who suffer from a disease that can cause serious liver damage. Find out more when we return.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what advice would you give to a young parent?
For a young parent, he should find out how he can sustain the wife and the baby at the moment. Like, he should not sit idle by just waiting or for the mother of the child to be the one to run up and down.
We should focus on our family, because there are so many other factors that will derail our attention from our family. We should have friends, yes, but the friends we should make is the friend that help us to build this family.
I would advise a young parent to, like, they don't know anything about being a parent, visit friends or even ask their own parents how to parent a child, the things to do when they are crying, when they are misbehaving.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's time for our Tuesday Health segment, and today we're talking about an effort to stem the spread of a potentially dangerous disease in South Sudan. A team of Egyptian doctors have arrived in Juba to screen and treat patients suffering from hepatitis C, all free of charge. The doctors are following through on an Egyptian initiative aimed at treating 1 million Africans, with the goal of eradicating the disease in Africa by 2030. Residents in the capital say they're grateful for the free medical treatment. Winnie Serino has the report for VOA from Juba.
Dr. Tamer Refat, one of the Egyptian doctors' team screening patients at the National Public Health Laboratory for Hepatitis C, says the Egyptians are helping South Sudanese because South Sudan is a sister country to Egypt. He says the doctors are in South Sudan to try to stop the disease from spreading. Refat says screening for hepatitis begins with checking blood pressure, measuring weight, height, and blood sugar.
If the patient is positive, we start station 2, which is complete lab, and PCR, which is a test to investigate the level of the virus in the blood. If it is positive, and his labs will go to the third station, which is assessment of the condition by the ultrasound and see what medicine is suitable for him. And last station is giving the treatment to the patient. After that, we ask the patient to come every month to have the treatment, just for 3 months.
Dr. Simon Deng, a consultant microbiologist in the virology department at the National Public Health Lab, says out of 320 people tested for hepatitis C since Monday, 8 of them were found to have hepatitis C. There are several types of hepatitis, including hepatitis B, C, A, E, and D viruses. But Deng says the most common types in South Sudan are hepatitis B and C, which are easily transmitted.
Hepatitis B and C, these are sexually transmitted viruses. They also can be transmitted through blood transfusion, and also they are transmitted through sharing of objects, syringes, needles, blood lancets. And if these equipment are not sterilized, and they are being shared by the patients, the two viruses can be transmitted accidentally, besides sexual transmission.
23-year-old Rebecca Nyadeng, who recently escorted her mother to the National Public Health Lab for hepatitis C treatment, says her mother had been complaining of body pain and fever. Nyadeng says when her mother went to a private hospital on Monday, she was diagnosed with malaria and hepatitis C. She says she was charged 8,000 South Sudanese pounds for treating her mother, but was advised to take her mother to the blood bank where hepatitis C treatment is free. Deng says she was worried about the high cost of hepatitis C drugs before coming to the blood bank.
It's something good.
Yeah. It is something good. I feel proud of it because it is saving life. As we were planning for medication and we were told there is free medication here. So I think I will save some of it. But the one that I used yesterday has already gone because she's also suffering from malaria. But at least I can save money for other things.
National Health Minister Ria Guy Kok says hepatitis is one of the most common and most dangerous diseases in South Sudan. Speaking in Arabic, he says the government does not have statistics on the number of people who have died or suffer from hepatitis C, but says many soldiers have the disease.
Lana, asal hepatitis, according to our assessment.
According to our assessment, hepatitis deaths are more than HIV. It is even more than TB. When recruits were being taken for screening in organized forces, this is when we first knew about the scope of this disease. You will get a huge number of them being rejected because of being hepatitis positive, which means among the population also, they are there, but they are not showing signs until the situation deteriorates. This is when you come and seek medical treatment.
Guy urges all South Sudanese to take advantage of the free medical service to get tested and receive treatment. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Botswana has started offering free antiretroviral therapy, or ART, to foreign sex workers following a decision to extend treatment to non-citizens. An estimated 30,000 foreigners living in Botswana are HIV positive, and most are sex workers. Until now, the Southern African nation was one of only a few countries that did not offer treatment to non-citizens. From Gaborone, Botswana, VOA reporter Dube has more.
35-year-old Mary Banda is an HIV-positive sex worker from Zambia. In deteriorating health, she struggled to get treatment since she arrived in Botswana in 2018. Now she has a lifeline thanks to a Botswana government decision to offer life-prolonging antiretroviral therapy to non-citizens.
I'm very happy because most of people, they'll be saved, especially those who were struggling from taking ARV. Back home, when they called us and they started helping us, we couldn't believe that it's really happening. We thought that they're just talking.
Banda says health officials have been helpful and monitor how sex workers respond to treatment.
When they called us and they started helping us, we couldn't believe that it's really happening. We thought that they're just talking. But after they've given us, they make sure that they do follow up to check if the tablets are okay, if there's nothing like side effects or whatever.
The Botswana government's decision has been hailed by non-governmental organizations as a step towards fighting the epidemic. Teboho Haritsani, a legal and advocacy officer at the Botswana Network on Ethics, Law and HIV, Bonela, describes the development as progressive.
Sexual relationships are indiscriminate. So that is to say we cannot provide ARVs for a certain portion of people who live in the country and yet not provide the same treatment to another subset of the residents of the country.
The local sex workers organization Sisonke director Tosh Bega also welcomes the move.
We are very excited by this move. It's long overdue because we've been fighting for migrants to get ARVs. It's a milestone.
But for now, of the estimated 30,000 HIV-positive foreigners in Botswana, only 7,000 are getting treatment, according to the U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, PEPFAR. Mkondisi Dube for VOA News, Gaborone, Botswana.
Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa delivered the annual State of the Nation address today, offering reassurances that his government is committed to making the country a better place. The opposition MDC party wasn't receptive to that message, walking out as they have several times when he has spoken in the past. Reporter Kudzai Zvinavashi has the details.
The State of the Nation address during the opening of Parliament started with a moment of silence, paying tribute to Zimbabwe's long-time former ruler, Robert Mugabe, who died last month. Facing a major economic crisis that has led to food and fuel shortages, massive inflation, and public service strikes, Mnangagwa said his government has made progress and is fighting for more.
My government continues to take bold and decisive steps to open up and grow the economy for the benefit of all our people. We are reforming our economy, we are reforming the political space and the very public of our society.
The address comes after government has taken the fight to cash barons in the black market, where they forced the biggest mobile money operator to suspend some of its services. Mnangagwa said the depressed economy required government to support some key sectors.
The sustained turnaround of our economy hinges on focused support for the productive sectors, especially agriculture, mining and manufacturing. The 2018-2019 drought has seen our agricultural sector registering a negative growth rate. Going forward, government has set aside Zimbabwe dollars, $1.8 billion, towards the production of strategic crops, such as maize, soybeans, and cotton.
Through an input support system, government is going to supply machinery, seeds, fertilizers, and other farming inputs to farmers. But Mnangagwa said only those with a proven track record will have access to the loan system. Mnangagwa urged farmers to grow traditional grains in light of climate change. He also expressed concern that the same climate change has affected Zimbabwe's hydropower plant, resulting in persistent power cuts. The speech paints a lot of progress, which many ordinary Zimbabweans may be blind to, given the prevailing and worsening effects of economic decline. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zvinavashi from Harare.
And that is our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Panda Obuku by Jal Nyal.
Koi dizu wok digamizu kuna pen biki yakit.
We've been listening to Jal Nial with his song Panda Abuku. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and thanks for allowing us into your homes and vehicles this evening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Njima anchi nali chaki ya dukit
chinali charan cheto
njima anchi nali chaki ya dukit
chinali charan cheto
njima anchi nali chaki ya dukit
chinali charan cheto
njima anchi nali chaki ya dukit.